I've heard a lot of stories from my grandfather. He was a detective for 27 years of his life, and I grew up listening to the tales of he and his fellow lawmen. As a child, he obviously amended the stories quite a bit to make them age-appropriate, but as I grew up, more and more of the true stories came out, starting about 2 years ago. My grandpa, he got very sick. He's been on a slow decline ever since, and while it's been one of the hardest things I've ever had to deal with, his illness acted as the catalyst for a set of stories he'd never before brought up. He said he kept them filed away deep in the folder he doesn't like to open. He calls them the impossible ones. But this last one, the one he told me last night, he said it's the one that still keeps him up some nights. The one he thinks about every day. He said, he's looked over the case files more times than he can remember. Then a full re-examination of it all more times than he can remember. And it never makes any more sense. He said he only told me now because he feels in his bones that he doesn't have a lot of time left. I recorded him telling me the story, so what follows is my transcription of the case, verbatim. I've only excluded his coughing fits and any off-topic remarks made during the telling of this case. The case was a murder-kidnapping, at least that's what it looked like. It was me and Olson. I've told you about him. There was a family, the Nevilles. There was Benjamin, the husband, Jennifer, the wife, and Katie, their 6-year-old daughter. One of the neighbors had gone out for the paper around 6 a.m. and saw the Nevilles' front door wide open. When she went over to see if everything was okay, she saw the wife's body. The neighbor called 911, and eventually we were sent over there. Now, when I say there was no outward signs of a struggle, I mean it. There were no signs whatsoever that anything had happened. Well, except for the dead body, but even her body, there was no wounds, no marks of any kind. I'm getting ahead of myself. On our way to the house, it came over the radio that the husband and daughter, they were unaccounted for. You're thinking, a husband did it. Well, we did too, obviously. Problem was, both the family's cars were still in the garage, so we think that they might be on foot. Some officers canvassed the neighborhood. No one had seen them, including two neighbors that were on their porches for hours, starting in the early morning. No one had heard any kind of commotion coming from their house either. I mentioned the wife's body. She didn't have a hair out of place. She was on her back in the kitchen. About a third of her upper body was under the table. We found out after the autopsy that she'd just died. There was no cause that they could find. She'd been a perfectly healthy woman. Didn't smoke, didn't drink, ate right, exercised. It's like she just blinked her eyes and gone from alive to dead. Anyway, we searched the house. We went through it with a fine-tooth comb, basement to attic. Found nothing. No evidence of a struggle, no weapon, nothing. So we left. We'd spent hours in that house, thought maybe we should come back in a day or two with some fresh eyes. Went over to where Benjamin worked. He was a supervisor at a lumber yard. According to his coworkers, he'd shown up at work that morning just before 5 a.m., when he got in, he worked on this narrow crate thing he was building in his office. Something he told his coworkers was a project for his house. According to the other morning supervisor, he'd only built about half the thing. Around 6:15, he said he was running to the bathroom, and that was the last anyone saw of him. And they never saw him leave. While we were at the lumber yard, I realized I'd left my notes at the house. We drove back over there, and we got there while they were taking the wife's body away. As soon as we walked in, the stench hit us like a bus. It was what a newly discovered but long dead body smells like. We knew it obviously couldn't have been the wife. We asked a few of the officers and forensics folks that were still at the house what the smell was, and they told us that it had only started a few minutes before we'd gotten there. I'm not exaggerating when I say the smell was everywhere in the house. I smelled some dead ones before, but this smelled like every wall in the place was lined with corpses. But pretty quickly, we found that the smell was strongest leading up to the attic. Now, I told you before, we checked the attic, I chucked it myself about 5 times, but we went back up, me and Olson. I was up a little pull-down ladder first, and when I poked my head up, I saw something. I saw a piece of wood, like a box, you know, a crate. Shaped kind of like a rifle case, maybe 3 feet tall, 2 feet wide, 6 inches deep, rectangular. It was standing straight up. There was blood leaking from it. Call the photographers and all the people in there. And they'll do their thing. And finally, they pull out all the nails and they'll open the box. Out falls the husband. Think about that. This guy was maybe 6'10", 140 pounds, and he was put in a 3 foot by 2 foot by 6 inch crate. His bones were just a mess. His insides, all his organs, they were flattened. They were just wet, squishy pieces of fabric almost. He was stuffed in there like, I don't know what like. He was just a rectangle of blood, skin, and parts. His skin had the discoloration of a body that had been dead for about 2 weeks, which obviously didn't make any sense since they'd seen him at work that morning. He was also missing his eyeballs. Now, we were standing there trying to rationalize the whole situation when something caught everyone's ears at the same time. It was a little girl's voice calling out for help. What followed was a sequence of all the people in the attic, and the rest of the house, and the people out on the lawn, and the few people that were standing on the other side of the yellow tape. All saying some variation of the phrase, "Sounds like it's coming from over there." Problem was, every single person swore they heard it coming from a different direction. For me, I heard it from right above me. No kidding. First time I heard the little voice say, "Help me," I was looking straight up, right up to the rafters. Of course, she wasn't there. It's my brain's response to where it perceived her voice is coming from. We had to listen to every one of these people tell us where they thought they heard her voice coming from. People swore it up and down they heard it coming from the kitchen cabinets, the bedroom closets, the refrigerator, the tank behind the toilet, for God's sake. People on the street said they heard it from underneath cars, behind trees, the sides of the houses next to the Nevilles. Everyone heard her voice from about a minute and a half, 2 minutes tops, and just stopped. About 2 weeks after that day, the wife's sister had a funeral for Jennifer. It went fine. They buried her, all that. Husband's remains were cremated not long after that and put on display in a different part of the cemetery. I don't remember exactly when it happened, but at some point over the next few weeks, after he was cremated, someone stole his urn. I was missing for about 6 months, and then one day, I got a call. Found out a groundskeeper at the cemetery had called in. The wife had been dug up and posed like she was leaning against the grave, just relaxing. She had the urn in her hands, but it was wrapped in skin. Here they tested it, and it was the husband's skin. I pretty well reconstructed the man after he poured out of the crate. He hadn't been missing any skin. And remember I told you his skin was discolored? Well, that skin was perfectly preserved. And inside the urn, with his ashes, there were 3 eyeballs. One of them was the husband's. It had been, what, 22 years? I still hear the girl's voice calling out sometimes. I don't mean my memory or mind is playing tricks on me. Ask your grandmother, she heard her too. The same 6-year-old voice. And then I remember it was May 12th, 2007. I was going to pick up a pizza for us. I saw that girl. I saw Katie Neville. I don't mean I saw her grown up. I don't mean I saw a little girl that looked like she was her when she was young. I mean, I saw that kid. She was standing outside the Walgreens right by our old house, crying. Pulled over, I got out of the car. I started walking up to her. I can't explain how I felt in that moment. I was nauseous. I was so afraid. Help me, sir. I don't know what the hell happened, but she just disappeared. Never took my eyes off her. She was just there 1 second, gone the next. Thought I was losing my mind. I was seriously worried about my mental health, but then after about an hour after I got back home, the phone rang. It was Olson. I hadn't talked to that son of a bitch in 5 years. He called me up that night. Said he saw Katie Neville sitting on a bus bench, crying. He lived on the other side of the country. He killed himself the next day. My grandpa took a deep breath after that. There'd never been a good end to these stories, and if there was, they wouldn't be the impossible ones. I'd have figured them out one way or the other. I know I told you some of the others, but that girl's voice still wakes me up in the middle of the night. Sometimes I hear it from downstairs, sometimes from the bathroom. Sometimes I'll be laying on my side, facing away from your grandmother. It'll sound like it's coming from her mouth. We never found a trace of that girl. Nothing. And I told you what they do with those cases. God damn it, I'm sorry. Let's face it. That's it. That's the worst one. Some of the other ones might sound worse to you, but that's the worst one for me. Okay. He told me he didn't want to talk about it anymore. And said, now that he told me, he would never talk about it again. Hey there, kids. It's me, Mr. Creepypasta, and thank you for watching today's video. And if you're on the podcast, then thank you for watching today's podcast. And if you're on not the video or the podcast, then thank you for tuning into this telepathic broadcast. Oh, and there's something I need to mention to all of you. It's actually the big Halloween surprise. I mentioned this early on in the summer, but I never really got a chance to say what it was because it wasn't really nailed down at the time. We, and by we, I mean me, Creeps McPasta, and Mew, are going on tour across the United States in October. All the dates for it have been nailed down as of actually today, and tickets should be going on sale as of actually today. If you'd like to find out more, I'm going to have a bunch of information in the description down below all the way up until the tour is finished. But if you want to get a hold of your tickets, all the venues we've chosen have very limited seating, so make sure you get your tickets now if we're heading to a town near you. And one of the most exciting things about this is that I've been able to work with Mew across the United States doing conventions over the past couple of years. But this is the first time I think that Creeps McPasta is coming to the U.S., and it's especially the first time I'm going to be able to work with him live on stage. So this is going to be a show that's bigger than anything I've ever dreamed of being able to do in my entire YouTube career. So check it out down below at marginwalkerpresents.com to get a hold of your tickets. And come see us to celebrate Spooktober. Especially, I want to give a big thank you to my Patreon supporters. You guys over at patreon.com/MrCreepyPasta are the best. Especially, Trace Miles, Talon Karlick, Jordan Alexander Sanchez, Wayne Milstead, Dr. Strawberry, Daniel Polson, Chompinski, Ken Lando Higuchi, Rev Miroku, Brianna Ventine Jensen, Nicholas Saeed Elyasin, Buddy Burrows, Stephen Van Huss, Tristan Pelton, Goonington, G. Weevil 3, Chance Burnett, Diana Kraus, Asia, Gabrielle DeBaca, The Red Oak Shield Virus, Sandy Barney, Titty Connoisseur, Melissa Swagart, Kudir Max, Jay Kerbine, Dante Rao, Last Blade Song, Chris Wrights, The Gender Bros, Mads Beck Lorenzen Post, Don Mulmeister, Eliminator 86, Nebsky, Andrew Stenberg, Jason Silsma, Steampunk Center, and Rafael Rodriguez. If you guys would like to join them, you can head over to patreon.com/MrCreepyPasta. And that's it for tonight. Sweet dreams, everyone.